Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. It's great to have you here this afternoon. It's just a beautiful day today here in the Midwest, and hopefully we're going to have some continued great weather over the weekend. We got all of our lawn work done last weekend, so I'm going to do absolutely nothing.
That is nice. You get to reward yourself then, and maybe go for a walk with your husband or family and enjoy the great outdoors. I'll be getting leaves together myself.
Yes, I'll be thinking of you, I promise. Well, you know, I did a little bit, since my yard work was already done this week, I did my first Christmas shopping.
Already?
You know, it's sad.
Good for you. No, that's good.
It's really sad. All of the Halloween decorations were 50% off, but I didn't buy any. But I did buy a couple of Christmas gifts, and it just got me thinking. The reason that I do it this way, and maybe my guest will confirm that this is a good idea. Maybe she won't. I don't know. But I don't like to get that bill in January where it's crazy big. And so I just kind of like to do things throughout the year. And so I bought a handful of gifts this week, and I'll probably do the same thing then as we head into November.
That's a smart way to go because, starting out the new year like that and going, oh, no, I have to pay this off somehow in debt. And it changes your whole mindset with your, you know, perhaps resolution mindset and everything else is going to change your ways. But that's good, Joe. I like that.
I gotta do that. Thank you. You know, sometimes when I have teenage nieces and they're pretty easy to buy for once you know what they want, and then you just go get that thing and you don't get anything else. You only get the thing that they say that they want, and then you're good.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I already saw an early Black Friday sale that my wife and I actually got on board with. We needed a piece of furniture and saved some money on that. But those sales can be tempting, you know.
Right.
Oh, and we're going to see them more and more here leading up to Thanksgiving, I'm sure.
It's the catch 22 when you start shopping for other people for Christmas. The deals are sometimes so good that you think, well, maybe I need one of those. And then you end up doubling up. So we're going to talk about money today, talk about some finances. And of course, we have just a wonderful guest here, an expert in this area. Her name is Mary Hunt. She's authored several books and sold more than a million copies. She also has a syndicated daily newspaper column called Everyday Cheapskate. Let me tell you a little bit more about Mary Hunt. She's an award-winning and best-selling author, more than 23 books. She's also a sought-after motivational speaker who she helps men and women battle debt. She's the founder and publisher of Debt Proof Living, a highly regarded and popular consumer organization consisting of an interactive website, monthly newsletter, and personal finance tools. And today we're going to talk about her book, Seven Money Rules for Life. Welcome, Mary.
Oh, thank you so much. Nice to be with you guys.
Well, it's great to have you here, and I love that you kind of boiled it down to seven money rules for life, because a lot of us, you know, we can't think of 14, but seven seems like a manageable number. How did you come up with that number?
You know, it was something that came across my mind kind of as a lark. I have been doing this for so long. I founded this organization back in 1992. Since then, I've been able to just have the privilege of leading people out of debt, helping them to learn to live below their means. And so it's been a wonderful, wonderful journey. But, you know, after a while, things can get kind of convoluted. You write about something for so long, you go off on all these little rabbit trails and everything. And so I was just, all by myself thinking if I could boil it all down, all of this, how do you live below your means? How do you take control of your financial future? How can you find financial freedom in this world that is so bent on putting us into debt for the rest of our lives? And my goal for myself was to see if I could write rules to do this that would fit on the back of a business card. That was my goal, to make it so simple that I could not only memorize it and have, you know, at my fingertips, boom, 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 you know, could I actually make them so simple it would fit on the back of a business card? So that was my goal. And I came up with these seven, and sure enough, they really do. I can do this every day, and when I give seminars and speak with people, I challenge them. I hand out the blank business cards and say, all right, let's do it. And it's very simple. And that's the key, is that we can get these things into our minds so they become part of our lives. It becomes part of, you know, just like rules we have for life, like look both ways before you cross the street. Mm-hmm. Don't touch a hot stove. These things that we learned as children, some of us didn't learn some financial things, but I talked to a lot of people who did. I mean, their parents started teaching them from a very young age, save first, spend later. It's a great, great rule. And I wish that more of us would think about that as a rule for life. But that's where the book came from, Seven Simple Money Rules for Life. And it's all here in a very – it's not a very thick book. It's an easy read. And I challenge people to see if I'm not correct, that everything you need to know for managing your money now until the day God calls you home to heaven, everything you need is found in these four, these seven, I wish it was four, these seven simple rules for life.
Well, it's true. And they are very sensible and also very doable. In fact, as I was reading through your book, I was reminded of something a personal trainer once said when I was talking about losing weight and exercising. And he said, I'm going to write my own book. It's going to have two chapters, Eat Less, Move More. And yeah. I thought, well, that's kind of what you're doing, except you're talking about something even much more complicated, which is our money and our future. And so I thank you for putting them just in a very sensible kind of way so that we can do it. So I'd love to run through the rules, and maybe you can explain how you came up with them. And not only that, but how can we put those into action, especially as we're moving through this busy holiday season and in just this economic culture climate that we're in right now and the uncertainties that exist. So the first thing
Absolutely.
That you write, regardless of the economic climate, is rule number one, spend less than you earn. Talk more about that.
That is, you know, it sounds like pretty much of a no-brainer, but how many people do this? And I want to point out the way this is worded is very important. Spend less than you earn. Less than you earn. The rule is not do not spend more than you earn. And the reason is, if you say that, don't spend more, that almost gives you license to spend it all. You can spend it all, which is really, really dangerous. The rule is spend less than you earn, indicating there is a gap. There needs to be a gap between what you earn and what you spend. It's in that gap that you're going to find financial freedom. That is where you're going to be able to live without debt, fund your own emergency. So that is just so very, very, very important. Spend less than you earn. How do you do that? You've got to become disciplined. It's called financial maturity, which a lot of people don't live that way, thinking I'll spend all I have, and if I need more, I'll lean on my credit until I get paid again. That is a dangerous way to live. I know, I've been there, and I just caution people, spend less than you earn. Make sure there is a gap. Now, how do you do that if you're in over your head right now, spending more than you earn, always having to juggle the credit cards to try to get from one paycheck to the next? You know, that takes determination. That's the difficult part, is to be able to kind of throw our lives into reverse a little bit, scale back. It's called frugality. And that's really what I do every day of my life at my blog, which is Everyday Cheapskate, which you mentioned, which is also the newspaper column. It's available print in newspapers, but also online at everydaycheapskate.com. Mm. My motivation is to help people learn how to save time and money every day. How can we live our lives and spend less? How can we enjoy all the good things that God has given to us and become better managers of that so that we are spending less in order to widen the gap between what we earn and what we spend? And we get right down to the nitty-gritty, how to make your own laundry detergent so you can do your laundry for 5 cents a load instead of 50 cents if you're buying, you know, commercial detergent. It might sound really silly, but that's where it starts. You have to start keeping track of what you're spending and then constantly looking for ways. How can we continue to eat, feed the family, without spending half of our income on food?
And so,
I help people do that.
And part of that is you write that we need to know the answers to those questions. Exactly how much do you make? Exactly how much do you spend on groceries? What does it cost to do a load of laundry? And so some of that takes a little bit of effort on our part to get to the point where we realize, ooh, maybe we're already spending more than we earn and we didn't even realize it.
That's right. It can be a wake-up call for a lot of people. you know, we have to kind of get rid of these attitudes of entitlement that, our society pushes on us. You know, for instance, that everyone over the age of 10 not only would like but is entitled to have a smartphone, or that all of the things that are available in life are, I've got to have them right now, I'll pay for them later. Yeah, that those are the attitudes of entitlement that, really, really do sabotage this whole idea that we need to learn how to spend less than we earn.
So part of spending less than we earn is having that not only a bit of margin, but having a section to save, for the future. And that's your rule number two, to save for the future.
Absolutely.
As you get income, transfer 10% of it to long-term savings. And that's going to build margin not only today, but in the future as well, is it not?
That's right. Absolutely. And it's a start on an emergency fund. It just is amazing to me, and I read it in the news probably two or three times a month. There's a new survey out here, that's, you know, the latest one that just knocked me out was that 77% of Americans say that they are living from paycheck to paycheck and cannot fund their own emergencies. That means they're spending it all. And this whole rule number two, to save for the future, that's where this money goes. The first at least $10,000 that you save, and I know people are going, yeah, right, like I could save $10,000. You can. I know you can. If you are motivated and you get some help, let me help you do that, you will be able to do that. That is money you need to earmark, put away for emergencies. I don't know what the future holds, but I'll tell you something. When you're living paycheck to paycheck, you find yourselves perpetually in debt, because when something comes up, you know, the refrigerator goes out or a child needs to go to the emergency room and there's a copay you have to pay. You know, putting that on a credit card might sound like, well, I don't have anything else I can do. You might as well be shooting yourself in the foot. So that is where we need to get really, really diligent, is to begin saving. If you absolutely cannot save 10%, start with something. Start with five. Oh, you can't do five? Oh, well, could you save $5? How about one, anything? I'm telling you, what it's going to do is it's going to set your attitude to realize, you know what? It feels good. It feels good to step away from the edge. I'm going to do it. I'm going to save twice as much next week and the next week until I am up to 10%. I want to help you do that. It'll change your life. It really will. And there you are. You're widening that gap between what you earn and what you spend.
I'm talking to Mary Hunt today. Mary is the author of the book, 7 Money Rules for Life. We are going to go through those 7 rules. We've gone through number 1 and 2. Number 1 is spend less than you earn. And number 2, save for the future. We'll have some more rules coming up. If you'd like to get a copy of Mary's book, well, we have a couple to give away. You can give us a call at 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. Or maybe you have a question, something you're struggling with in this current economic climate, and you'd like some advice on how to get around it, how to get through it. You can give us a call again at 877-933-2484. We'll be right back with Mary Hunt. Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks for joining us today. We're talking with author Mary Hunt. Mary has a fabulously famous blog and newspaper article as well called Everyday Cheapskate, offering lots of tips on how to do things cheaper, better, and faster, which is also the title of another one of her books. But today we're talking about 7 money rules for life, how to take control of your financial future. We've already gone through rule number 1 and number 2. Rule number 1, spend less than you earn. And rule number 2, save for the future. Mary, I love rule number 3 because you encourage us for many reasons to give some of our money away. And yet that flies in the face of saving money. So how do you justify that, and how can you encourage people to take advantage of that rule?
You know, without doing this rule, none of the others are going to work. In fact, it's kind of true of all the rules. They fit together like a puzzle. They work together. Listen, we live in a country where we have so much abundance, but we have another thing. It's a big enemy, and it's called greed. I don't know about you, but your kids, my kids, The little ones, we pick it up. We learn it. It's almost like it's in the air. We feel greedy. We want everything we see. We want it in all the colors. We want it right now. We don't want to have to wait. It is a terrible thing. And the antidote for greed is gratefulness. The way we express gratefulness in a tangible way is that we give away some of what we have. That just does so much for our attitudes, for those attitudes of entitlement, for the pity parties that many of us have. Oh, my house isn't big enough, or, oh, the neighbor's got a new car. Oh, I need a new car. You know, all of those things will melt away, and they should, because greed is not a good thing for our hearts. The way to do that is to give some away. You know, find the passion of your heart. Where does your heart lie? What is really ministering to you in your life? You need to support. You need to give some of your money. If you can't think of one thing in the whole world that is worth for you to give away some of what you have, look at the needs in your own neighborhood. You know, is there a homeless shelter? Is there a church that's got a pregnancy center for young moms where these babies are being rescued and all? What is it? Ask God to show you where even a small amount of your income given with hands wide open, no strings attached. Oh, my goodness. This is going to just, it's going to turbocharge your efforts in wanting to live below your means, to save for the future, to be able to put these money rules to work in your life. Saving money, rule number two, is the way that we slay that horrible thing in our lives called fear. Fear of running out of money. Fear of never having enough. Fear, fear, fear. When you're saving, putting money aside, that melts away. And giving takes care of the other enemy of greed. Giving back. You know, it's no wonder God tells us to do this. He wants us to do this. This is why he blesses us, so that he can learn to trust us to bless others. I really, truly believe that. And, you know, I can't prove it in your life. Only you can do that. But I'll promise you something, you will never regret the effects, the wonderful pouring out of God's grace and mercy. He says he will open the windows of heaven. He's done that on me, and it won't be in terms of money necessarily, but there are so many other things called joy, peace, patience, satisfaction, a willingness to thank him in all things. I'm telling you something, that rule number three, boy, it's going to change your life. It's going to take some faith. It may take a big leap of faith. But come on, why are you here on earth anyway? You are here to have a purpose. You are here to praise God, to share him with the world. And what a better way than if you are a peaceful, happy person yourself. I'm telling you, rule number three will do it.
Well said, Mary. Rule number three, give some away. As we move to rule number four, it takes a little bit more homework on our part. It says, anticipate your irregular expenses and then prepare accordingly. What do you mean by irregular expenses, and how can we prepare for those?
Well, I have an example. Let me tell you. I don't know how many of our listeners remember something called the Christmas Club. Christmas Club account. Our parents had them. Some of us may have had them. They're not very popular anymore now that credit cards are so prevalent in our country. But think about the Christmas card, the Christmas Club. The way it worked was on January 1, or the first week of January, people who had paychecks would sign up for Christmas Club. And what that would do, the bank would, you'd tell the bank, I want you to take out $10, $15, $20 out of my paycheck every week when I deposit it to the bank. I'm giving you permission, authority to do this. Take it out before I even see my check. And I want you to put it into my Christmas Club account. What would happen is the money would just be, would disappear, but with your authority. And you know what would happen after a couple of weeks? You'd forget. You'd totally forget because, you know, you don't see it. You don't miss it. And then come Thanksgiving, usually the week after Thanksgiving, the bank would send a check in the mail to you for the contents of your Christmas Club account. Wow. It was amazing. $600-$700, maybe even $800 for your Christmas shopping. And you go, what? You feel so good about yourself that you were smart enough to save a little tiny bit every week in anticipation of something you knew was coming, but was so far away you didn't think it would really get here that fast. Can you imagine if we took that same concept, which is exactly what I've done here, and do this for other irregular expenses. Now, I'm not talking about the rent, the food, the car payment every month. I'm talking about things like, well, Christmas, that's a good one. How about family vacation? How about refrigerator repair? If you think your refrigerator is never going to break down, you're fooling yourself. It's going to happen someday. How about car repairs? How about that life insurance bill that comes twice a year? You're never ready for it. How about the property insurance, property taxes? Some of us pay that only once a year. It's a huge bill. The way to find peace and to make sure you're never going to get caught unaware is to set up the same kind of effort that you do with a Christmas Club account. You do this yourself. I teach you how to do this in rule number 4 in chapter 7 on page 93. I teach you how to do this. It's very easy. And then you break it down. 1/12, if you're thinking of how much you should be saving monthly, or 1/52nd of that total bill. Like say you're going to spend $1,000 on Christmas. You break it down. How much would you have to set aside every week in cash in order to do that? And then you do it. You can set this up as a savings account at your credit union or bank. They don't need to know that you've got your own little accounting system going on at home. But you figure out, I need to put in $200 every month in order to fund all of these expenses that I know are coming down the pike, so I will be ready when they get here. That is a secret to living debt-free, is to anticipate all of these irregular expenses and to prepare accordingly.
Well, and it also gives you a bit of a budget if we use that Christmas example and kind of what I said I do, maybe it's irregularly, but purchase a couple of gifts in key months so that I don't have all of those gifts to purchase the week before Christmas. And it's a way to kind of spread out that money. And then, but if you were to save it every month and then you had this large portion of money, you could just say, hey, this is what we're going to spend on Christmas, and we're not going to spend any more, and then you would have a very nice January.
You would, absolutely, and I wanted to congratulate you on your early Christmas shopping. It's fantastic.
Plus, it's
you
fun.
Know,
you
I'm
get
going
to think about it.
If you were able to do that with cash and not put it on credit cards that are going to cause you a big headache come the 1st of January, it's very smart. I mean, that is rule 4. In action. I don't, you know, I think my way is always best, but I'm realistic here. I know people have their own way to put rule number 4 activated in their lives. Fantastic. That is wonderful. If you want to prepay your life insurance policy, that would be good too. Pay it now, then you won't have to worry. Think about it, and then you can start anticipating the next year. But whatever it is, the problem is that most of us are so tight financially that we're barely getting through the week till the next paycheck. It's more than we can bear to think about expenses that are going to happen in 6 or 8 months from now. And that's so wrong. I want to help you get to the point where you have the freedom to anticipate in that way.
Well, I'm talking to Mary Hunt today. She is an expert on finances and making your life controlling your financial future. We're talking to her about 7 money rules for life, and we'll be back after the break on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I love when Ted puts songs that I haven't heard since I was like a teenager, and I just start giggling a little bit because they're all true and good to hear again. Well, today we are just very blessed to have Mary Hunt on the show with us. We're talking about her book, 7 Money Rules for Life. Maybe you're in a situation where the economic climate has kind of changed how you feel about your finances and your financial future. Well, we're here to help you get that settled and on the right track. Mary has, of course, the 7 Money Rules for Life. We've gone through the first few. The first is spend less than you earn. The second, save for your future. The third is give some away. The fourth is anticipate your irregular expenses and prepare accordingly. And that one seems to have the most willpower assigned to it. So if you can take that extra $20 and not go buy a pizza and instead put it into some kind of account, then you may be very happy at the end of the year. Well, Mary, one of the fifth rule that you have, very sensible rule as well, is tell your money where to go and then make sure it gets there. What do you mean by that?
You know, this is a concept that took me so long to realize. The money that we are given to manage, I mean, all of us have some, whether it's a paycheck or a trust account or, you know, whatever it is, we have money to manage. We have to see ourselves as the boss over that money. We are this, they are, think of those dollars as people who work for you, your staff, your employees. They come to work and you tell them what to do. You assign the job to each one. And then you have to make sure that they do what they say. That's what a good manager does. I know this is sounding awful much like a budget, and that's what it is, but it's a new concept. Instead of your money managing you and telling you where it's going to go, you have to do that. You have to tell it. So every single dollar that comes in that paycheck, before you spend it, before you do anything, you need to sit down and make the assignments. Call them job assignments if you like. You know, if your rent is $600 a month, 600 of your employees are assigned to pay the rent, 600 of them, not 400, and we'll figure out the other 200 some other day, or, 600, and then they change their minds and don't show up. No, you have to see yourself as the manager. And so you give every single dollar a job to do. Now, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out. First of all, you got to figure out all the jobs. You know, what are your expenses? What are the things you absolutely have to pay this week from that paycheck? Don't you spend $1 until you sit down and make these assignments. Now, that to me makes me feel empowered. I get to decide. You may have to put together 45 different plans until you can get it all figured out. The jobs are all going to get done. But that's called a budget. Now, it's kind of a silly way to talk about it, perhaps, but out of this will come a spending plan. Once you've got all of the assignments figured out, where all the money's going to go, remember 10% of your employees are going to go into savings. Some of them are going to be money that gets given away. And then you're going to look at your absolute bare necessities that you have to cover, and from there you just take it from there. And it's called a spending plan. When you get it all together, it's in writing, you've got it, and you've got to make sure that you, as a good manager, stick to it and make sure those dollars do as they have been assigned.
I'm going to guess that you have some tools that can help people if they go to your website, maybe some budgeting tools. People may have never put together a budget. My dad was really good about teaching us how to do that by giving us a checkbook and an allowance and helping us understand where money goes, how to get it places, how to write checks, things like that, even though checkbooks may be obsolete. Now, the budget concept is not. Do you have tools like that on your website, and how could people get
a
hold of them?
We sure do. Yeah. I have two websites. Debtproofliving.com is a membership website. It is an annual membership fee of $39, and that is where you're going to find all of these tools and all of the, you know, we've got calculators. We've got a huge group of people there, wonderful, friendly people who will welcome you. Also, my books, including the one we're talking about today. I teach this. It's just the simple elements of debt-proof living. And, you know, budgeting is like prescription eyeglasses. What fits me is probably going to make your world look really wonky. And your glasses aren't going to work for me. A budget, a plan, a spending plan like this has to be very, very personal. It has to fit yourself perfectly. So that's what I don't give you the forms to fill in the blanks. I'm not going to tell you to spend only 38% of your take-home pay on housing. I can't do that. I don't know what your life is like, where you live. I don't know any of those things. What I can teach you, though, is how to make a budget that fits you perfectly, just like your own prescription eyeglasses. They make you see clearly, and they may work only for you, not for anyone else in the whole world. But that's how unique and individual a budget must be.
Wonderful. Great advice and some great tools for people to use as well. In fact, if you're listening today and you have a question for Mary, you can give us a call at 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. She's willing to answer your question right here in the air. Yeah, but we can also keep going with our rules. Rule number 5 was tell your money where to go and then make sure it gets there. Rule number 6, manage your credit rating to achieve a high level of credit worthiness. Why is this important for us, Mary?
Well, first of all, let me tell you, rule number 6 is the one I don't like. I admit it. I hate it. I wish we didn't have to have it. I wish that this rule would be death to credit, live on cash. But in our day, in our society, it's those days are gone. The truth is that you have to have a great credit score in order to live out the rest of the rules. With a good credit score, you're going to get the lower insurance rates. You're going to get interest rates on a mortgage that are far lower than if you've got awful credit. And so I teach you in this chapter, you know, we just have to live with it. It's not the most ideal way of life, but that's the time in which we are living. You need to manage your credit score. To do that, it's an underlying thing of your credit report and what gets reported and how to clean that up. So you want to have a good credit score. We cannot live without it. You're going to have to just suck it up and do it, and I want to teach you how to do that in the best way possible, because rule number 6 really plays into letting you be able to do all the other rules in a way that you can do that without spending more money than you earn.
You know, Mary, we have someone who sent in a question, and it is one I've heard many times before. We've asked ourselves this as well. Is it better to pay extra toward your mortgage, or is it better to take that low interest money and instead use it toward savings or investments?
Well, this is often asked, and here is my overarching answer to all of this. A mortgage is a debt. Most of us could never own a home without the gift of this in our country. A mortgage should be the very, very last debt you pay off, okay? You need to pay off all of your unsecured, your credit cards, all of that, student loans, all of those need to be paid off first. You should not be paying extra to your mortgage until all of your other debts are gone. Once your mortgage is left, then you start prepaying that. But that is an individual thing. In fact, you probably need a counselor to look at your whole situation. Should you be putting extra money towards your mortgage or funding your retirement account with that money instead? Should you be putting it towards your mortgage and owning your home free and clear before you start building for the future with investments and so on? It's such an individualized thing. I'll tell you from a personal standpoint, my husband and I were able to pay our mortgage off completely in full. We own our home free and clear about 2 years ago. Wow, that has really impacted our lives in such wonderful ways. I would wish that everyone could experience what it feels to own your home free and clear without a mortgage. But, you know, wisdom says we need to be preparing for retirement as well. What I can tell you is that your home mortgage debt is a secured debt. It is there is an escape valve. If something happens and you cannot pay that mortgage anymore, you can sell the house, okay? You have a way out, which makes it a safe debt. Beyond that, it's individual. You just have to figure that out, maybe talk to a financial counselor, have someone look at that. But I would tell you that any other debts, you should not be investing at all until they're paid off, because those are so wreaking havoc on your life. But when it comes to your mortgage, it's a little bit different.
Mm. Well, just such great advice. And it kind of goes along with what you just said for rule number 5, which is a budget for everyone is going to be different depending on their unique circumstances, needs, and situations. And it's probably the same for the mortgage as well, that it's going to depend on unique needs and situations and what has been put away for retirement. And so so there's really not a blanket answer that you can give. But I think the best thing you said was really to talk to a professional about what's going to be best for your situation.
I would absolutely say that. And I'm sure that your organization, I'm sure that you have recommendations for believers in this area who can counsel people according to their faith and their biblical values and so on. I would highly recommend that.
Okay. Rule number 6, manage your credit rating to achieve a high level of credit worthiness. Rule number 7, it's the last one. Look at how easy these have been. Borrow only what you can repay. Borrow only what you can repay. What are some good examples of good debt or bad debt?
Okay, first of all, you left a word out. The rule is borrow only what you know you can repay.
Okay.
All right. Now, this is kind of hard. If you have a credit card and you don't have any money and you're going to go out and buy Christmas on your credit card, you don't know that you're going to be able to repay. Where are you going to get the money to repay that next year if you don't have the money now? That is foolish. That is absolutely wrong. Never, ever do that. As far as you can, stop creating unsecured debt, which means that there's nothing that can be repossessed. There's no collateral. That is death to your finances, unsecured debt. I want to help you get out of debt, and I can do that. But this rule is borrow only what you know you can repay. And I know our time is short, so I'm going to cut to the chase. The only way you know for certain you can repay it is if there is collateral. That means a secured debt, a secured mortgage on a home. You know you can repay it because of the house. The house secures that. That is the security saying and that you know you can repay. Do you know for certain you can repay a student loan? That's a tough one. You know, some would argue with me and say, well, yes, you know you can repay because you'll have a degree and you know you'll be able to be a doctor and you know you'll be able to be a tech. No, you don't. I mean, life is not that certain. We live in uncertain times. It breaks my heart for people to be borrowing so much against their future on student loans. That's probably another book I need to write. But that one's not clear cut. But I'll tell you, the credit card debt is. You do not know you can repay. So a car loan, yes, that is collateralized. You know, if you can't pay it, they're going to repossess the car and the debt goes away by the value of the car. At least that's the way it's supposed to work. Sometimes it doesn't. But in this chapter, I help you decide, is it possible to live without any debt at all? Eventually it will be as you become more financially mature and so on. But getting there, for instance, buying a home, not many people can buy it flat cash, you know, for the very first home. So you need to be very careful as you enter into this area of debts that you know you can repay. And the rule goes on in this chapter. Once you have the debt, you need to work very hard to pay it off quickly. Don't string that thing out so that you are retiring, getting your Social Security benefit every month and still making payments on your student debt. Are you serious? People are doing that. I don't recommend it. But this is kind of touchy. Can you live without any debt at all? Probably not. But what is the wise way to look at debt and to take it on? That's what we cover in this chapter 10, rule number 7, borrow only what you know you can repay, and then pay it off as quickly as you can.
Well, Mary, I just thank you so much for not only being on the show, but for creating rules that do seem like they're sensible. And you've given us some great opportunities to put some of those rules into action right away, especially as we move into this holiday season and the end of the year. So thanks so much for doing that. If you want to learn more about Mary, please go to her website at debtproofliving.com. And Mary, what have I forgotten? Where have I forgotten to direct people?
Okay, the second website. everydaycheapskate.com. Absolutely free. You can sign up to get my daily post in your email box. I'd love for you to do that. We have so much fun at that site. All the archives are there. You could spend the next 2 or 3 weeks just reading them, chuckling, learning an awful lot, and having an opportunity to interact with me. Send me a note. I'd love to hear from you.
Well, thanks so much, Mary, and thanks for making this an enjoyable conversation. Talking about finances are not always things that, you know, we love to talk about, but you have just such a great sense of humor and a sensible way of bringing things to light. So thanks so much.
Thank you, Joe. It's been a pleasure.
And you've been listening to Mary Hunt talking about her book, 7 Money Rules for Life, How to Take Control of Your Financial Future. I hope you can do that as we move into 2017. Thanks for your calls.
You can't add a single day by worrying. You worry your life away. Oh, don't worry your life away. You can't change a single thing by freaking out. It's just gonna close you in. Oh, don't let the trouble win. You may
to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks for joining us this afternoon, talking about money today, about finances and our future, actually. And we talked to Mary Hunt about her book, Seven Money Rules for Life. These are very practical suggestions on how to control our financial future. But one of the questions that I had and one of the questions I have is, how early should we be asking or inviting our kids to get involved with this? How do we teach them to be in control of their financial future? Well, Scott and Bethany Palmer are two guests who are also devoted to helping couples and families control their financial future. They're going to talk a little bit about that.
One of the things that a lot of people get hung up on is they say, well, there's things that we need to do around the house. Why would I pay my child to do that? Because that's just about being part of the family. And we could not agree more. No, we all want to make sure that they know that there's activities and things that we need to do, clean and all that. It's just about being in a family. So what we suggest up until they're, what age did we
usually
eight or nine, we suggest that you give your children three $1 bills a week. Now, it could be three dimes a week, it could be three pennies a week, it could be three, you know, depending on your economic situation, but three of the same kind of currency, and you encourage and you start having them exercise the positive traits of their money muscles. And here's how they do it. You set up a save box, a spend box, and a give box. And you start to train them that every week, even when they're 5 years old, actually we started when our kids were three, but they put a dollar in save, a dollar in spend, and a dollar in give. And they're doing that every single week. And what this trains them to do is how to start to manage their money, that their money does go into different piles. And then you can start to train them with each pile, how do you think about it? And this is where the money personalities come in great, because believe me, spenders are going to have no problem spending, and the savers are going to have no problem with their save amount of money. But we want to make sure that we train them with those different amounts based on what their money personalities are.
You know, allowances can be such a huge learning opportunity.
Mm.
And some parents say, well, I don't want my kid to be entitled. I don't want them to be this. But you help dictate that in the way that you talk to them about money. And we have loved this. And we're even noticing my teenage son now. He just turned 15, and he kind of had his first real job this summer cleaning carpets. And he never missed his give.
Mm-hmm.
He never missed his save, and he never missed his spend because that had just been programmed into him. So part of, I know a lot of parents will say, well, allowances do this and they're bad. But if you look at it from the idea of I'm helping train my kids up in the way that I would like them to act now when they're teenagers and even when they're out of the home, if you start soon, you can program that into them very early.
Now, when they start to be age 9, that's when you can start to say it's earn to get. So you still give them the $3 or whatever amount of money that you give them. But in addition to that, you start setting up, making lists of things that they can do above and beyond regular household maintenance, and they can start to earn money that way in addition. So, and then by the time, like Scott said, they're 15, they're just so used to putting some of their money in save, some of their money in give, and some of their money in spend, and it just starts them off in such a great way of thinking about money.
You know, when making mistakes, life experience is a pretty good teacher as well. What do you do when our children make money choices that we know are unwise? How do we intervene, or do we intervene?
Well, that's definitely age specific. So, you know, your 5 to 11 year old probably isn't going to make a whole lot of bad decisions. I'll give you one that we just recently had with my 15-year-old. He came down, and he announced with some of the money that he had saved, he was going to buy a kayak. Well, I live in Colorado, and
there's no
water where we live. And I instead of just saying no, you know, you cannot have a kayak, because he's a risk taker. He likes to do different things. I just walked him through the process. I said, okay, well, you know, how much is your kayak going to cost? Well, it's $250. Where are you going to buy it? Well, I found this great one online. And I said, great. Well, when are you going to use it? And there was just dead silence. And he says, well, I haven't really figured that out. And I said, well, do you really want to tie up $250 in a kayak that you're not going to use? If so, great. We even have space in the garage for it. We just cleaned it out. And then I just let him process through that. And so I think part of what we can do as parents and in our relationships in general is we can ask better questions. And if we start asking questions and have them start just basically talking to us, and we're not shaming them, we're just asking questions. My question, Nicole, is, so where are you gonna paddle that bad boy around? In the blow-up tub in the back? I mean, I don't know. Then he could process through that and say, hey, you know, that's probably not the best decision for our money. When it comes to your older kids, you have to be willing to let them make a mistake. I got my first credit card at the student union at the University of North Dakota. It was $1,500, and I was excited because I got a 2-pound bag of M&Ms. After $1,500 were on it, and I came home from the summer, my dad said, that's too bad. Now you're going to have to work 2 jobs to pay that off. But that was my reality. My dad let me make this mistake, and then he helped me get out of it. But he didn't help me by giving me money. He helped me by getting another job on top of the job that I already had set up. So we have to let our kids fail. But at the same time, we have to be able to give them suggestions and light bumps along the way financially on getting out of it. If you bail your kid out once, and I hope every listener hears this, if you bail your kid out once, you better be ready to bail them out again and then again and then again and then again. So it's very important that we don't be, that mom and dad don't become the bank of parents, but that they learn how to teach their kids and work through them through their mistakes.
A lot of people ask us, too, about for older children and children who are, you know, moving back home, and do I have say over their money and all that. Here's our rule. If you are buying one thing of theirs, one, their cell phone, their car insurance, their electricity, their roof over their head, if you are paying for anything of theirs, you have absolutely every right to speak into and say things, as long as you're not shaming them, but give them suggestions, and make that clear. Make that clear to your children. As long as I am paying for anything, I have absolutely every right to say whatever I want in terms of your money. And you know what that will do? Is really encourage them not to depend on you for money, because who wants to have their parents breathing down their neck about the way they spend money? Nobody wants that. So there's just some things that we can do as parents to really empower and encourage our children with their money, and it's so important. There's almost every week there's some kind of opportunity that you can take and grasp and to be able to encourage the whole financial world and life of your children. And you know what? We believe it's one of the greatest gifts you can give your children.
Well, just talking about providing for a positive financial future for all of us, for our kids, for our families, and for our futures as well. I hope you enjoyed the show today talking to Mary Hunt and learning about that. You can check out our podcast on myfaithradio.com. Have a great weekend.